Srila Prabhupada ki. Shri Bhakti Vaibhava ki. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Kiriraj Maharaj ki. Join the joy go for a morning.
Thank you.
Okay. So tonight we'll begin a new section from chapter 7 onwards. So we've discussed chapters 1 to 6. Next Monday night we'll have an overview of chapters 1 to 6. And then, not next Monday, but the following Monday, will be the closed book exam. And your open book exams and oral presentations will be due on that date also. What's that? The 7th of May. May the 7th. Very good. So May the 7th, all exams are due. All course requirements are due. Okay. Did you speak to her earlier, Jen? Okay. So tonight we'll begin from chapter 7. We're going through a new pastime now, which will be the middle pastime, or one of the middle pastimes. So it involves Lord Indra. Chapter 7. Verse number. Tonight we'll go from verses 1 to 17. Gopal, what are you doing? Huh? Come and sit. Quickly, no playing under the table. Gopal. Sit down. Okay, so we'll go from verses 1 to 17. Chapter 7, Indra offends his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O great sage, why did the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, reject the demigods who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident. Gopal, sit down. Sit. Shukadev Goswami said, O King, once upon a time, the king of heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Maruts, Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Ribhus, Vishwadevas, Sajas, Ashwini Kumaras, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, and by great stately persons. Also surrounding him were the Vijayadharas, Apsaras, Kinnaras, Patagas, birds, Uragas, snakes. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services. And the Apsaras and Gandharvas were dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella, as effulgent as the full moon, fanned by a yak tail wisp, and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king. Indra was sitting with his wife, Shachi Devi, who occupied half the throne. When the great sage, Brihaspati, appeared in that assembly, Brihaspati, the best of the sages, was the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, and was respected by the demigods and the demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master. Nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect. Okay, so what is this pastime highlighting? Gurupara, yeah, or if we say more broadly, Vaishnavapara. So this is a repeating theme within the Srimad Bhagavatam. We've already heard an entire pastime on this topic, the beginning of the fourth canto, involving Daksha and Lord Shiva. And now we're hearing another warning. So the Bhagavatam repeats things. Why do we have to repeat things? So we don't forget. Because our tendency is to forget these things. So in order for us to remember them, just like we see in the Vedic verses, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalori Nasjeva, 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 Kitiya Amrita. So when things are repeated, it gives prominence to them, or it makes them more important, like that. So we're understanding this topic is very important, because it's been repeated again and again in the Bhagavatam. So, if one commits offences to devotees, this will hinder one's spiritual life greatly. And it can be one of the primary causes of why we are not advancing rapidly in devotional service, why people leave devotional service. It causes all sorts of problems. So Mahaprabhu has told us in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is the Hati Mata offence, or the mad elephant offence, to offend Vaishnavas. So we will go into this topic in the next several weeks while we're going through this pastime in detail. We went through it in detail in the fourth canto, but we'll go through it again because many of the devotees were not there at that time. It's very important, the subject now. So we're seeing that the gurus may act in different ways to instruct us. So Brihaspati, how does he react when he is offended by Indra?
He's tolerant.
He's tolerant? Yeah. And then what does he do to show his tolerance?
He leaves the
place. Like that. Ultimately he disappears. Like that. So, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that he could have cursed Indra. He could have just vented his anger at Indra to chastise him immediately. But sometimes the guru will not act in that way, but he will show other ways to improve us. And actually a very powerful way of humbling someone is to ignore them. Just like if someone is very proud, one way that the guru will deal with that proud personality is that they will ignore them. And this very much humiliates the false ego. It brings the false ego back down into perspective. So sometimes the guru will act like this. So instead of just chastising him, he chooses, no, I will leave. And sometimes the guru will act in this particular way. So the guru will show different. There are different ways the guru will act in order to educate the disciple. Hari Sariprabhu tells that he was Prabhupada's personal servant for around 18 months, late 1975 to early 1977. You want to sit down? You're okay. So, for 18 months or so, then Hari Sariprabhu was serving Srila Prabhupada. He may be coming here soon. Is he coming to Melbourne? Have they made any announcements? He's actually in Australia. He's in Australia now. I don't know if he's coming to Melbourne, but he's actually in Australia, so I presume he may be coming. He may be here in the next several weeks. So Hari Sariprabhu, he served Prabhupada for around 18 months, and he said that Prabhupada had different levels of anger. Prabhupada had one level of anger where if you did something wrong, then he would chastise you. So that was like Prabhupada's anger was strong, but then he said there was a second level of anger when Prabhupada was really angry. And he said he became so angry, Prabhupada, when he was extremely angry, that his lips would quiver. His bottom lip would shake. Prabhupada was so angry. Yeah, sometimes he said, not very often Prabhupada would do this, but he would become completely angry. And then he said the third level of anger, Prabhupada would just become disgusted. And he wouldn't say anything. So one time, Hari Sariprabhu tells the story that if you've been to Prabhupada's quarters in Vrindavan, have you been to the room his bedroom, which is upstairs. You go out the back to the courtyard. You walk through and go out the back to the courtyard. Then you turn kind of to the left, and there's some stairs going up. You go up, and actually Prabhupada's bedroom is up there. Where Prabhupada's bed is, down in the main room, they put the bed there only in the final weeks, I think. And then Prabhupada left his body on that bed in that room, in that exact place. But actually, Prabhupada's bedroom is above. And you look up, if you look up, there's a balcony there. And Prabhupada's bedroom and Prabhupada's bathroom is there. So one time, Harisori Prabhu, he went up there, and he was serving Prabhupada. And then he walked out, and he went down the stairs. And as he went downstairs, just by habit, he locked the door behind him. And he went down. And then he went away to do something. So what he'd done, he didn't realize, he'd actually locked Prabhupada on the roof. Prabhupada was up there. So then Prabhupada came out, and he wanted to get down, and he tried to open the door, but it couldn't open. And Prabhupada was up there for an hour, and there was no one around, because all the devotees were off doing service in different places. The Krishna Balaram temple was not busy back then, so there was hardly anyone around. So Prabhupada was up there for over 1 hour. And then finally, someone saw Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "Get Harisori." So they ran and found him and they brought him, and then he realized what happened. He ran up, he opened the door, and then he came up and he offered his obeisance to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just walked past him. Prabhupada was so angry, he was extremely angry, because he'd wasted 1 hour of Prabhupada's time. So Prabhupada was so angry, he didn't even say anything to him. Just in total disgust, completely like that. So the guru will teach us in different ways. And sometimes in order to bring our ego down, the superior devotee will ignore us. And that is a way of lessening our pride. So Indra, he is being humbled by Brihaspati, who just doesn't react. Yeah, he walks in. The guru of the demigods walks into the assembly. Indra is proud and attached to his opulence. He doesn't react to Brihaspati, does not receive him. So Brihaspati, he just walks out. And then immediately, Indra, he becomes conscientious of what has taken place. So it was very interesting because this morning His Holiness Devamrita Swami spoke on the Bhagavatam, very famous verse. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shubhya. Like that. It's a very famous verse in the Bhagavatam. Tomorrow I spoke on that this morning, which is very appropriate for what we're discussing here. So we become proud in this material world. Queen Kunti says, Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shridhya, like that, because of these different reasons. Janma means birth. And especially in India, you see this is, not just India, but in India it can be more prevalent or more easily seen, that people are very attached to birth. Janma, I am born like this. So therefore, there's some false prestige attached to this position. Even I was in Vrindavan the last few years, and I was in my cloth shop where I get my cloth from, Dinesh and Sons, in Lloyd Bazaar in Vrindavan. And I was sitting there with Dinesh and his sons, and it was raining a little bit outside on the street, and one very poor man, like Sadhu, he was walking down the street and he had some disability. So he had some crutches, and as he's walking along the street, his crutches slipped, and he fell on the ground. And I watched most of the shop owners, because I was thinking like, oh, you know, we're shop owners, and these people are just beggars. No one did anything. So I got up, and I went out there, and I helped him stand up, and even then, they still didn't do anything. And they became quite embarrassed, because they should have reacted. But in India, there's still this false class system, I'm better than them because of my birth. And because of that, they wouldn't do anything for the person. But he was obviously a sadhu, he was in Vrindavan. So the whole mentality should be to serve. But because of false attachment, false prestige, we think we are superior to another person. So we become proud because of Janma. Aishwarya. Aishwarya means wealth, opulence, like that, wealth. So Indra is thinking, I'm very wealthy, I'm very opulent. The danger of wealth is that it is intoxication. That's why people want money. And you see, these days in the world, money has practically replaced God. Money is the central focus of everyone's consciousness. Everyone, they constantly talk about it, they constantly want it, they constantly meditate upon it. And they basically, their whole lives are just striving for this one thing, to get money. So Aishwarya, or wealth, it intoxicates one, and devotees should be very careful. Even if we inherit or somehow gain wealth, we should still live quite simply. It is good for a devotee. Even if you have the wealth, like that, use the wealth in Krishna's service, if there is excess. And you just live relatively simply. Otherwise, it will intoxicate you. Because then you get more wealth and you think, oh, I need a more prestigious car, like that. But then the danger is that then when you're driving that more prestigious car, then while you're in that car, then you're in the barb of the car. Right? And you see people who drive prestigious cars, they get into this false sense of pride. So we should live very simply. A very good example of this in our movement is Ambarish Prabhu, who owns, what does he own? Ford and Jaguar and Volvo. He owns these companies. He owns the entire Volvo fleet. He owns Jaguar, he owns all of them. But he... What is that? Is it? Okay. I heard a number of years ago that he owned
it. You used to own before.
You used to own it. Okay, maybe you sold the Tata. Anyway, he earns a lot. He's a billionaire, like that. But he himself, he drives around himself, he owns a Volvo, like that, and he drives around in a very simple, not a simple car, but he could obviously have something much more luxurious. And he just drives himself around, he doesn't need a chauffeur and all these things. And he's extremely wealthy, but he himself lives very simply. And if you ever see him in Mayapur, he just dresses like a normal devotee. He's not particularly open. He's quite a simple person. And he has very simple habits like that. So even though you may have the wealth, you have to be very careful of it. If there is excess wealth, it should be used in the service of Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. This is the system, actually. So one must be very careful about wealth because it is intoxicating and it gives one a false sense of prestige. And then we think that we are better than others. That is the danger. We think, oh, I'm wealthier, so I'm better than the other people. Even amongst the devotees, it can be their subtlety. You know, I'm more wealthy, or I'm from a better birth, or... and then there is Shruta. Shruta means? Yeah. Yeah, knowledge, intelligence, jnana. So for devotees, this means becoming very learned in the Shastras. But that can also develop a sense of pride. Sometimes you see devotees are very learned, but they become proud, and this defeats their learning. The learning becomes minimized or less potent. In other words, sometimes you see devotees, they give class, but really it's just an ego trip to prove their learning. So they get on the asana and they quote so many verses and they tell so many stories and they know everything about everything. But there's not really a sense of humility there. And therefore they lose their potency. So Shruta can also be like this. Learning can also work against us. So we should become learned, but only for the point of assisting others in becoming Krishna conscious and also helping ourselves become Krishna conscious. So we should become learned. But actually the fruit of learning is humility. If you're actually becoming learned, you'll become more humble. Not that you become more proud. Just like we see the famous example in Mahaprabhu's pastimes is Keshava Kashmiri, who is the Digvijay, the conquering pundit. But when he came to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu defeated him and reduced his pride completely. So it is not by this learning that we can attract Krishna. It is not by the Janma or the Aishwarya or the Shruta. And then the final one is Shridhir. Shri means physical beauty. People who are very physically attractive, they become very proud of their physical prowess. And this is also a type of intoxication. Because then we can control the opposite sex. If a man is very attractive, very powerful, and if the woman is very beautiful, it controls the opposite sex. And then we become intoxicated by that. And if you see the world these days, practically the world is intoxicated by the beauty of the opposite sex. Just like I saw an advertisement the other day, I can't remember even what it was for now, but it was just a beautiful girl. And I was thinking, I was looking at the advertisement, I think it was floor tiles or something. I was thinking, this is ridiculous. You know, the floor tiles had nothing to do with a beautiful girl whatsoever. But the beautiful girl will attract everyone, and then they will sell the product based on this shribya. So it is intoxicating, and it controls the world. But, as we heard David Ramaswamy very beautifully described this morning in his class, that if one becomes intoxicated by any of these qualities, one develops a false pride, and one cannot chant the holy name of Krishna sincerely. Queen Kunti says, you will not chant sincerely. You will not be able, as long as you're attached to these things, you cannot approach Krishna sincerely. Hey, Gopal. So, this is the warning the Bhagavatam is giving us. Do not become overly attached to all of these things, because it can be the cause of fall down. And it can be the cause of aparada. So, when we see the Indra, he's becoming intoxicated, and then he offends the Guru, which is a very serious event. And he has to suffer the ramifications. We'll see in the next couple of chapters, he suffers terribly for doing this. So, ultimately, Srila Prabhupada is saying that every devotee has to become a Majjhima Adhikari. Right? We cannot remain on the Kanishta platform. Kanishta platform means you will commit offences. If you are a Kanishta Adhikari, then you will commit offences to other devotees because you will lack discrimination, and the main discrimination you lack is your own qualification. You'll feel that you're more qualified than what you are, and then because of that you'll commit offences to others. Even an Uttama Adhikari, when he deals in this world generally, he becomes he acts on the platform of a Majjhima. And you'll see the example of Prabhupada. Prabhupada was quite obviously a Maha Bhagavat. He's beyond Uttama Adhikari stage, but still he acted like a Majjhima Adhikari in terms of his dealings in this world. Hey Gopal, you're going to have to do something. Why don't you hide behind a chair or something? Because your tiger is too distracting for me. It's okay, just put him behind something so I can't see. It's just I've got this tiger jumping up and down. And very hard for me to follow my... Okay, that's it. Good boy. Why don't you get a chair, huh? Oh, you can go. So, what was I saying? About being a Majjhima Adhikari, and then there was something about a tiger. He comes down to the Majjhima Adhikari, yeah. So then we have to learn, by Prabhupada's own example, because he came to the platform of a Majjhima Adhikari, which means you discriminate. And you have to learn how to discriminate. In other words, one of the qualifications of the Majjhima Adhikari, he understands very clearly who is God. Because people, especially from India these days, they don't know who is God. You know, except for the devotees in ISKCON practically, and the Vaishnavas, people don't know who God is. So they cannot discriminate. A Majjhima Adhikari, he discriminates. He understands who is God, who is demigod, right? Who is God and who is the servant of God. Then we have to understand as a Majjhima Adhikari, who is more advanced than us. We have to learn this as devotees. Who is more advanced? Right? So we can treat them and deal with them appropriately. Right? Then you have to learn who is equal. And you have to learn how to deal with equals properly. What is the instruction which Rupa Goswami gives us in terms of dealing with equals? Yeah, Maitri, like that. Specifically, he says, there are six loving exchanges. So you reveal the mind in confidence, you inquire confidentially, you give the gifts, you receive the gifts. You give the prasad, you receive the prasad. This is exchange between equals. Also seniors and juniors. But this is how you develop loving exchanges with those who are equal to you. Then those who are junior, you show compassion to them. And you assist them and you help bring them up in their Krishna consciousness. That is your service. And those who are envious or not devotees, you avoid them. And those who are innocent, some non-devotees are innocent, you give them Krishna's mercy, and those who are envious, you avoid them. So you have to learn all of these etiquettes if you want to advance. So we're meant to act as Madhyama Adhikaris. That is what Indra forgot at this point in time. He forgot to offer respect to the senior personality. And because he does not respect the senior personality, his life becomes very problematic. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us this lesson again and again and again. And we'll see it come up again and again in the future cantos. Even in the 10th canto in the past time, to show the danger of offending. Any points so far?
During the lecture of Sri Ramakrishna, my godfather, he's a counselor in Mandal. He was saying about this, you can go to Jamma Ishwari to the temple, today or today. He's saying that it's not a problem being wealthy or having all these opportunities, but one is sometimes born with all these features. But it's dangerous to become satisfied with the opportunities. We are satisfied and we go into a comfort level in our material life, then we don't anchor for Krishna. So he said that the solution is to have self-induced poverty. So you don't have to, if you are not born poor, then you must induce poverty. We are giving the example of some Brahmachari local temple there, where he was staying with Kira Drashta, but he was. Sometimes he has to give Mangalarti next day, so he stays back at the temple. He was saying that it was summertime and there was a fan, but the Brahmachari did not switch on the fan. And then he asked the Brahmachari, he said, no, I don't want to get used to that fan. So tomorrow I'll get used to that fan and I'll want that fan. So Brahmachari is sleeping in summer without sleeping all of it. He said that that's an example of self-induced power. So you have the facility for affording something, but you consciously don't afford that. Otherwise you get into that comfort mood and you can't approach the Lord with sincerity. And he was also giving example of when he went to IIT. IIT is a premier institute in Bombay. All the best students get into IIT. So in 1987, he was going, Radhanath Swami Maharaj was supposed to come and lecture at IIT Bombay, which is again the topmost of the IIT. And as he was inviting people, I think Devamrita Prabhu was there at the time, and Sridhar Prabhu was helping him invite devotees for the evening seminar by Radhanath Swami. So he went and a lot of people came and said, we'll come. But one particular hostel when he went, he found three people who were coming out from the hostel. And he invited them. There's a lecture by one of our Swamiji, please come and attend. And one of the boys said, you don't know who we are. So he was very proud. And then he asked them, who are you? And he said, I am All India ranking ranker 1, and this is 2, and this is 5. So, they were the India's best one to top 5 students in India. And they had that much trouble. And they said, you don't know who you are calling to the program. They told him. And you better tell your Swamiji to take care. If we come inside, we'll be finished. That's what they told him. And he just said, don't worry about it, just come for the class if you have time. And then he left. And finally, when Maharaj started his class, he found that these three boys came there and actually sat through the lecture. He said that Maharaj gave such an excellent class to that, coming down to their level of teaching that. At the end, Maharaj boldly asked any question, and these boys did not have any questions to ask Maharaj. And then they just left, they didn't have any questions. But actually, they had come in the mood of telling me. This is an example, and he said, this is what your knowledge, Shivi, is. Is it Shivi or?
Shruta.
This is what Shruta can do. Be very proud of your academic. Yeah.
Any other
thoughts? So extending what Prabhu has said, first practice Vairagya and then you can think of Vishnu Vairagya.
Anything else? Okay. Brihaspati knew nothing that would happen. Sorry. Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was puffed up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so. Instead, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home. So the lesson is that we should always offer respect. Whenever you see the spiritual master, you should offer your obeisances. Harisori Prabhu writes in his diary that when he was with Prabhupada, he made a conscientious decision at the beginning of his time serving Prabhupada that whenever he would enter the room or leave the room, he would offer his obeisances. So when you're dealing with the guru, with the senior devotee, then you must always offer respect. This should be the etiquette, like that. Because then you will keep yourself in the right state of consciousness, and then you won't offer offences, or you won't commit offences. But if you don't stay in the right state of consciousness, then you might very easily commit offences. So it was the etiquette, when the guru enters, everyone should rise. Unfortunately, Indra, his guru, came, but he didn't rise. He sat there, and he was intoxicated, because he was thinking, I am Indra. And we have to understand, Indra is an extremely powerful entity, extremely powerful living entity. He is one of the Lord's empowered servants. But he's extremely powerful, but he became intoxicated by that power. And then when his superior, who is more powerful than him, Brihaspati, when he entered, then he didn't offer respect, which is what he should have done. And there are many examples which are given. Prabhupada gives all through the Bhagavad Gita many examples. Famous example of Romaharshan Sutta, who failed to get up when Balaram entered the assembly. And Balaram took the kush grass and removed his head. And other examples are there also. You see, Prabhupada gives a nice example that when Narada came to visit Krishna himself, then Krishna got off the simhasana, and then he placed Narada on the seat which he was using, which is a very opulent seat for the king, and then he bathed his feet, and his wives were offering the chamar to Narada. So he was showing the etiquette. But when the superior comes, then you must show proper respect. That is the etiquette. Otherwise, you may commit offences. Unfortunately, Indra, he committed a huge offence to Brihaspati.
What is the body
Everything is bodily conscious. What did Prabhupada say to Guru Raj Maharaj? Guru Raj Maharaj said, Prabhupada, sometimes I get into Maya. Prabhupada said, you are always in Maya. We're always in the bodily conscious as well. Any other points?
We didn't see in the temple room sannyasis who are visiting, so the deities are open. Are we supposed to bow down in front of the deities to respect sannyasis?
You're not supposed to, no. In front of the deities, you're not supposed to offer that kind of respect. I think for the guru, generally we do it. Okay. Prabhupada accepted guru puja in front of the deities. Because you'll notice that after Mangalati, we don't start worshipping Tulsi Devi until the doors are closed. Because the etiquette says in the Nectar of Devotion, you should not worship others in front of the deity. So the fact that Prabhupada accepts Guru Puja in front of the deity, you know, that's Prabhupada's exalted position. The Prabhupada allowed that to happen. Because normally you would not do that. You would not accept worship in front of the deity. Because Prabhupada is Prabhupada. And his Krishna's very, very confidential associate, and somehow he's allowing like that. And I think for the spiritual master generally, I think when my spiritual master used to enter, even if the deities were there, then we'd offer obeisances like that. I mean, you can do it to the sannyasi, but the general etiquette is we don't offer obeisances in front of the deity. Okay. When we see devotees, but sometimes devotees will meet in the temple in front of the deity. So they should not offer respect, they should not offer obeisances in front of the deity. They should go outside and offer obeisances like that. That's the general etiquette. Any other points? So generally we won't do like that. Generally.
You do a mantra?
You have to do, yeah, always by the mind.
We're designing the same obviously to Tulsi Maharaj in front of the, if we don't worship Tulsi Maharaj, but we will speak many times. Can we pay obeisances in front of the Lord Tulsi Maharaj?
Like we said, the general etiquette is that you don't offer obeisances to others in front of the deity. So that's the general etiquette. So you should consider these things. Like I said, I think I remember offering my obeisances to my guru in front of the deity. So you know, sometimes we may do it, but generally the etiquette is we do not do it. So you just have to consider these things. Any other points?
I just thought I didn't know about this, but that's why I'm asking you. It usually I thought that only sannyasis we call Maharaj and all the grahas are like villagers of the confession and the kind of work. They are very exalted, but we call them Prabhu. Only sannyasis will be called Maharaj. But I thought like that, but I didn't know. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, that's the proper etiquette. Is your wife coming?
She's coming.
She's coming, okay. There's another seat there, just pull out.
You went upstairs.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We're happy that you're here. Jagannath, you sit there, and then Madhijit is there. Okay. Any other points?
When somebody is telling Bhagavatam, when somebody is speaking Bhagavatam, first we also observe the person and then they are getting out of, going out of the temple, coming back, then we see them, then we observe
them. Yeah, well the deities are there. So you're offering your obeisance to the deities. Generally you don't, like Rupa Goswami says, don't offer obeisances to others in front of the deities, generally. Like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, the deities aren't going to punish you heavily if you do it, but the etiquette is we should be mindful.
Okay. When we are entering the temple hall, we generally pay obeisances, and my personal perception was that we generally pay obeisances to the Vaishnavas in the temple and then we enter the temple.
Yeah, some devotees do that. I've even seen it written that some devotees do that. But the general principle is that we enter the temple room and we approach Prabhupada first. I mean, Vyasa-san, we offer obeisances to him.
Before, like, I read also that before, as soon as you enter and you leave, you pay all the senses.
To the devotees.
And you recite the prayer to the temple.
What's that?
You recite the prayer to the temple.
So devotees are doing it. So, like I said, I don't think Krishna will give a heavy punishment for devotees doing that. But at the same time, Rupa Goswami does. I know for myself, and I saw my spiritual master do it also. Not, and I actually heard him say it: don't offer obeisances like to a devotee in front of the deity.
Yes,
like that.
Yes,
so then there's that general when you come in generally. So you know, maybe if you want to do that, that's not like a wrong thing. So. But you'll notice that the system is in the temple is that after Mangalati, when the doors are closed, then we offer obeisances to Tulsi, and then after that we recite the 10 offences, and then we offer obeisances to the Vaishnavas. And both times, we're doing that when the doors are closed. So it is an etiquette, and it is mentioned by Rupa Goswami. So we should be mindful of it. That's why I'm saying be mindful of it. Okay, any other points?
So there's an interesting event in Sri Sampradaya where Mahapurna, who is the disciple of Ramanacharya, but is a guru of Sripad Ramanacharya. So when Sripad Ramanacharya was on Vyasaraman, Mahapurna enters the assembly and offers his dandavas to his disciple Ramanacharya. And everyone was stunned. How is that a guru is offering obeisance to a disciple? That's when and then they did not know what to say. All the disciples did not know what to say. And then they quietly inquired from Sripad Ramanacharya, how is that you have allowed your guru to offer obeisance to him? He said, why do you ask that question? Let us ask that question to Mahapurna himself. Why did he do that? So when they ask the question to Mahapurna, Mahapurna says that I see in Sripad Ramanacharya my own spiritual master, his scholarship, his revelation is so high. Therefore, when I offer obeisances, I'm not offering to my disciple Sripad Ramanacharya, but my guru. It's an extraordinary, but he discusses humanity.
Indra, the king of heaven, could immediately understand his mistake. Realizing he had disrespected his spiritual master, he condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly. So one thing that we have to learn to do in devotional service as a devotee is that if we make a mistake, we have to admit it and we have to rectify it. No one is so big that they cannot say sorry. We don't ever get to a point where we're so exalted or so advanced or whatever we think we are that we cannot apologize if we commit a simple offense to another person. So that should be the etiquette of a devotee. So Indra is a very pious person, and because he has offended his guru, he realizes immediately he has made a mistake, and this is his qualification. Okay, he made a mistake, but immediately he tries to rectify it. Same thing happens when he tries to inundate Vrindavan, and Krishna performed the Govardhan Leela. So then it took him 7 days in our time, which in his time might have been a few minutes, because you know, there's a difference in time. So then he rectified himself. Then he came and found Krishna and he offered his obeisances to Krishna. So we can commit mistakes, but we should learn from those mistakes. That is the point. We should not go on committing the same mistakes again and again and again. But rather, as devotees, we should understand I've made a mistake, and then I should go to the devotee who I have offended, and then immediately I should beg forgiveness from that person. So this is his great qualification. Indra is a very exalted person. He's a very pious person. So he made a mistake, but he's showing us, what do we do? Okay, we made a mistake, we committed an offense, then you go and you beg forgiveness. Just like there was one Mataji at the farm, we had a meeting at the farm a few weekends ago, and the devotees came down, and then she's a much more junior devotee to me, she's only a new devotee, and you know, she had some accident, and then there was some situation took place, and then I felt that I had offended her because I spoke, you know, kind of lightly to her, but she was in a lot of distress. So I was trying to speak in a particular way to relieve the situation, but then I felt maybe I went too far and I offended her. So then that was in my heart. So then next time I saw her, when I came to the temple a few days later, then I begged her forgiveness. I said, Mataji, I'm very sorry, I didn't speak appropriately. But she was very kind. She said, no, there was nothing there. Like that. You know, devotees generally don't take offense to things. But from our side, we should always rectify things. We shouldn't think, oh, she's just junior and I'm senior and like that. We shouldn't think like that. Because Krishna doesn't see like that. Krishna sees the sincerity. So even the junior devotee might be more sincere to you than you on any given day. So you have to be very careful how you deal with all the devotees. They're very dear to Krishna. Any points?
So something similar to that happened to me. One brahmacharya was talking to him while taking the happened, and suddenly he said, I said, how are you, Prabhu? He said, I'm such a low, fallen person. And he was talking in that language. I don't know what happened then, but I said, Prabhu, I'm sick of hearing the statement in this call. If you want to come together in life, then talk plainly, talk simple language. Then that breaks the barrier. Otherwise, these statements really create a barrier between us. You have taken apart of my statement. He said, sorry. You may say, sorry for what you mean that, but let's talk simple language. And then talk to
alas, what a regrettable deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence and my pride in my material opulence. I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him. You should not come this late. Doesn't matter. Don't come late. Although I am king of the demigods, who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence.
O my Lord, I do not aspire for material opulence or wealth, nor do I want a great number of followers to accept me as their leader, nor do I want a very beautiful wife to please me. Mama Janmani Janmani Shore, Vatar Bhakti Rahesati Pai. I do not even want liberation. All I want, life after life, is to be a faithful servant of their Lordship. According to the laws of nature, when one is extremely opulent, one becomes degraded. And this is true both individually and collectively. The demigods are situated in the mode of goodness, but sometimes even one who is situated in such an exalted position as King Indra, the king of all the demigods, falls down because of material opulence. We are now actually seeing this in America. The entire American nation has tried to advance in material opulence without striving to produce ideal human beings. The result is that Americans are now regretting the wholesale criminality of American society and are wondering how America has become so lawless and unmanageable. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.31, Narte Vidhu Swartha Gati Vishnu. Persons who are unenlightened do not know the aim of life, which is to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, both individually and collectively, they try to enjoy so-called material comfort, and they become addicted to wine and women. The men produced in such a society are less than fourth class. They are the unwanted population known as Varnashankara, and as stated in Bhagavad Gita, an increase of Varnashankara population creates a hellish society. This is the society in which Americans now find themselves.
Okay. Are there any points that are interesting here?
From the same lecture what Sridharma Prabhu was giving, he was saying that sometimes in devotional life, na janam na janam na sundari, that first, I don't want wealth, fame, money, but followers also come last. So he says that when in ISKCON one becomes a devotee, initially one gives up the first two things. But then later on, because he has given up the first two things, he gets followers. And then that's the time when danger, the real danger happens. Because then followers praise you for not having that. And then sometimes one gets intoxicated with the followers and one becomes egoistic, and then one goes back to money and women. And he says that many saintly personalities are falling down outside of ISKCON also. In the newspapers you find sex scandal or money scandal. People who are actually pursuing spirituality. So we have to be very careful about the follower mentality. That will take us back to women and
rest. Any other comments?
So in this context, can you take the example of Vijay Prabhu?
Who?
Vijay Prabhu. That he was such a leader in Nalanda. But in the point came where
Yeah, devotional life is very complicated. So you can't simplify it so easily. There's many factors which are there. It's not just one thing. So, Prabhupada quotes, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam ba jagat isha kami. So, in Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya speaks 8 verses, and in those 8 verses, he takes us from the level of Shraddha to Prema, Bhakti, which is the 9 levels of devotional service. So those 9 levels are covered within those 8 verses. So in this particular verse, Nadanam, 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 so that is the 4th verse. So which level of devotional service is this referring to? Nishti is Trinada Pi Sunichena Parola Pi Sunichena Mada. And then Nadanam is? No, Ruchi. Because you've gone past like that. Anatta Nivruti is back in Jodayam, like that. It is in the 2nd verse. So, one cannot develop Ruchi if one remains attached to Dhanam, Janam, Sundarim, Kavitam. You cannot develop a taste for chanting the holy name if you are still attached to these things. Na dhanam, dana. Dana means wealth. Like that. If you're too attached to material possessions, then you cannot develop a taste for chanting the holy name. And we all become attached to so many things. That's why you see in our tradition, you see the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would dress very simply. It describes they only wore loincloths. There's one pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Sanatana Goswami comes to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he's wearing a new chadar, shawl or quilt. He's wearing a new, like a chadar. So he sees that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps looking at the chadar. Yeah, he keeps looking at it. So he understands Mahaprabhu's mind that Lord Chaitanya is not satisfied that I am renounced. Someone just gave it to him. He didn't care. He wasn't attached like that. But then, because Mahaprabhu kept looking at it, after he left Lord Chaitanya's association, he went walking, and he met one devotee, and the devotee had a very old chadar with holes in it. He said, Prabhu, please take this new chadar. Give me your old chadar. And the devotee is very surprised. You want to give me the new chadar? He said, yeah, you take the new chadar like that. So then he took the old chadar, and then Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. Next time he saw him, he was wearing the old chadar, so he was not attached. So we all know it changes our consciousness. You know, every time I get a new chadar, then it changes your consciousness. Right? Because then you're wearing your new chadar. Right? And then your consciousness changes. Right? You become attached. You know, I see it in myself. You just get a new chadar or a new pair of shoes, and then constantly you're thinking, I've got a new pair of shoes, I've got a new chadar, I'm wearing a new dhoti, like that. So we all think like that. But then the danger is we can become attached to these things. So a devotee must live very simply. Just like when I was a brahmachari, then we only wear one colour cloth. So then I became a grihastha, and then I went to Vrindavan, and I thought, oh, now, good, I'm a grihastha. I can buy all different types of kurtas. I can wear, you know, Monday I can wear blue, Tuesday I can wear red, you know, Wednesday I can wear green, like this. But then I went to the shop, and the first time I went to buy the kurtas, then I just got a headache. Because then you spend half an hour looking at all the different types of kurtas. So then I just made a decision from that moment, from the very beginning of my grihastha ashram, I'll just wear silk. Same colour every day. So I get up every day, I just put on the silk, and then my mind doesn't have to wonder. You know, am I wearing green? Am I wearing blue? Am I wearing red? My pants, you know, should I wear red today? Because that will go with my socks. You know, and then, you know, then what sort of chatter do I have to answer? That's why, basically, I just wear neutral colours. I just wear browns and, you know, my chatter. You know, someone gave me a chatter, so then I just, you know, brown. Keep it simple. And then your mind doesn't have to go through all these trips. But even when you get a new jumper, even though it's a neutral color, or a new, then even your mind starts going through all these changes. So you have to learn to simplify these things and ultimately to become detached. Because at the time of death, these things will not help you. If you're thinking. Actually, it is mentioned in the Shastra that one should not even sleep on a bed. It's actually mentioned in the Shastra that one should not sleep on a bed. And His Holiness Radhanath Swami, even to this day, he sleeps on the floor. Right? Harris said, why? Because even sleeping on a bed, you become attached to the soft mattress. Then it says, at the time of death, you may be contemplating. Right? Oh, such a nice mattress. Like that. Anything you can become attached to in this world. So you have to be very careful, because the nature of the soul is to be attached. But the nature of the soul, which is covered by false ego in this world, is we become attached to the material world, to material pleasures. That's why Mahaprabhu says, na dhanam. You have to renounce dana. Dana means wealth, opulence, material possessions, like that. So you see, Lord Chaitanya, who's living in the Gambira, he was living very simply. Mahaprabhu didn't have any material possessions. Even Jagannanda Pandit, who was in the pastimes of Krishna, who was Jagannanda Pandit? Satyabhama. So Satyabhama, she appeared as Jagannanda Pandit. So she was in that mood of being the wife of Krishna. So he, Jagannanda Pandit, got some very nice oils and offered them to Lord Chaitanya and said, you can bathe, you can be massaged with these beautiful oils. Because he was thinking, you know, like in Satyabhama's mood, then, you know, Mahaprabhu shared the most beautiful oils and they could massage his body with these beautiful oils. So then after a few days, he came back and he saw that Mahaprabhu had not used the oils. Because Mahaprabhu didn't want to become attached. Oh, I'm using such nice oils. Like that. So he was living very simply. So Jagannanda went and locked himself in his room for 3 or 4 days and would not come out of the room. And then Mahaprabhu said, where's Jagannanda? And they said, he's in the room, he won't come out. Because in the mood of Satyabhama, he'd gone into the room and he said, I'm not going to come out. You know, if he's not going to use the oils, then I don't want to see him. Like that. So Mahaprabhu himself had to go and knock on the door and said, Jagannanda, Jagat, please come out. You know, I'll use the oil. Please come out. Yeah, he was scared of Jagannanda. He actually didn't use the oils, but he pacified. He said, please come in. He said, come and cook for me. He said, I haven't had your prasad for days. He said, come and cook for me. So Jagannanda came out and cooked for Mahaprabhu once again. So Mahaprabhu was teaching us, by his example, do not become attached. Now, he wouldn't even use a pillow. He would only use the... It says in the Bhagavatam, actually.
Your hand is the need of pillow.
What is the need of a pillow?
Your hand is the need of yourself.
Yeah, Bhagavatam says all these things. However, you have to be practical. I joined the Brahmachari Ashram many years ago, and the first couple of weeks I joined, one of the Brahmacharis told me, he said, why do you need a pillow? And since then I've had a neck problem. For 2 years I didn't use a pillow. You know, and now I've got a neck problem. And not very practical, like that. So in hot countries like India, then maybe you cannot use a pillow because you use the arm. But in, you know, in Australia, then I keep my arms under the. So then my head was like this, and now my neck is has some problem. So you have to be practical. You don't have to renounce artificially. Obviously. So Lord Chaitanya says, "Na janam, na janam." Jana means.
Followers,
like that. So Jagannath Brahmaprabhu pointed this out. We have to be very careful of followers. Because in due course of time, if you remain a devotee, then you will become attractive to others, and then they will give you respect. And then you become very attached to that respect. It is called pratishtha. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, of all the anathas in our heart, pratishtha is the hardest to give up. When others offer you respect. And we can live with so many without so many other things, but we are very attached to getting respect from others. Mahaprabhu said you have to be very careful of this, and this is very hard to give up. even when you think you've given it up for the 20th time, still isn't there. Very difficult to give up these kind of subtle attachments. Najanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam. Sundarim means the opposite sex. Kavitam means the sweet words of the opposite sex. We become captivated or controlled or attached to the sweet words of the opposite sex. This doesn't mean that the women or the wives should not speak sweetly to their husbands. Don't think I'll make them detached, I won't speak sweetly to them, like that. You should speak sweetly, but the men must not be attached. Which is a very exalted state of consciousness, actually. But if you want to develop nam ruchi, or taste for the holy name, you have to give up these lower attachments. Attachment to women, to wealth, and to fame. All these things, profit, distinction, adoration. So in order to develop actual taste for the holy name, one has to renounce these things. So it's a gradual process, it takes time. But we should, as devotees, aspire to become detached from those things. So once again, Prabhupada points out, if we do receive opulence or wealth, we should use it in the service of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that we should offer 50% of our wealth for Krishna's service, which in this very day, this day and age, is very difficult to do. If you gave 50% of your wealth to Krishna, what would happen? You'd have to live in the brahmacharya ashram. And your wife would have to live in the brahmacharini ashram. Practically, that's what it means. But it means that we should give as much as we can, practically, to Krishna. We should use our service for our wealth for the service of Guru, Vaishnavas, and Krishna. Okay, so. Any points?
From the setting in Chandrasekhar Prabhu's coming for, if a devotee is like occasional fall down, you can't that it's a fall down. In the natural devotion itself, Rupa Goswami says, if a devotee is fallen down and we can see, if the devotee is jumping back to the same position, so we can see that yes, it's occasional fall down. And taking example of the same devotee, he got a last Mayapur Yatra, he got a lifetime achievement award in Mayapur for developing the condition of from Mayapur distribution.
Yeah, devotees go through problems, but then they don't stop preaching. That's the glory. Any other points?
Also, I think I have read in one lecture that renunciation has to match the purity. If the purity is not there, then the renunciation will not stay for a long time. You will have to give up that renunciation which you are trying to do, because the heart is not there. So that's why we see some of the contemporaries that we say that the Maharaj and Bodhi, they are able to travel and all this. Not many devotees could do that. Because the purity is there, that's why the empowerment is there.
Any other points? If a person says one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religious principles. The Prabhupada said in the purport that one must show respect to superiors like his guru, brahmanas and Vaishnavas. So that is the principle. You must respect the gurus, you must respect the brahmanas, and you must respect the Vaishnavas. This is essential. So basically it pretty much means you have to respect everyone. That's really the message. And the teaching of Lord Chaitanya is Trinadapi Sunichena Torapi Sishnuna Manadena Amadena, Amadena. So do not expect respect for yourself, but give it to everyone else. So that should be the position of a devotee. It's an exalted state of consciousness. A lot of the time we actually don't do this very well. We're very... we discriminate a lot when it comes to who we offer respect to. Even though we say it, often we say, I'm the servant of everyone. But actually, our consciousness is not so much like that. we have a lot of discrimination in terms of who we offer respect to and who we don't. We calculate in our mind every time we walk into the temple. We walk through and then we think, oh, I'll offer respect to that one, but not too much to that one, and I'll offer respect to that one because then I'll get something from him. And then all these calculations there in our consciousness. But actually an exalted level of consciousness is one just thinks that I can offer respect to everyone. In other words, I'm the servant of everyone. So that has to become practical. So devotees have to learn to serve all of the devotees without discrimination. A good way to do this is to serve them prasadam. You can serve prasadam and you have to serve every devotee. The more senior devotees, the less senior devotees. And you have to learn to serve the devotees appropriately and sweetly. Just like we were at the Burajampa Rigid the retreat a couple of weekends ago down at the farm, and different devotees were serving out the prasad, and one of my realizations is that we need a prasadam serving course, because many devotees don't know how to serve very well. they don't know the order, which is just an etiquette, but even just their serving is not so good actually. And the one person who was exalted in his serving was Kirtiman Krishnaguru. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Kirtiman Krishnaguru. But if you want to learn how to serve prasad, go and learn off him. He knows how to serve prasad. He knows. He has mastered it. He has the realization from his previous lifetime. He can serve. He serves properly. Perfectly. Not this Hindu Bindu thing that I'll just keep putting more on your plate. Just like one time Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. And Prabhupada walked past the kitchen, devotees were cooking lunch for Prabhupada. Prabhupada ate very simply. Rice, dal, chapati, a couple of sabjis. Devotees were cooking about 13 different preparations for Prabhupada. Prabhupada walked past the kitchen and he said, what are you doing? I said, Prabhupada, we're cooking your lunch. And he said, are you cooking for you or are you cooking for me? Because I don't eat like that. So similarly, when you serve the devotees, you serve what they want, not what you want. There's those on the retreat, some of those just come put all this prasad on me and just look at them like, I don't want that much. It happens all the time. Even my mother actually had lunch with me today here at the temple and she had to leave half of it on her plate. I said, if you can't finish it, don't finish it. Normally we say, always finish your prasad. I said, if you can't finish it, I didn't want that much. They weren't sensitive to what the person wants. Like Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, one time I saw the devotee serving him at Govardhan and devotees just putting, Maharaj, take more. And he said, I can't eat more. I physically cannot eat more. So why are you doing it? Are you serving you or are you serving me? What are you doing? If you're serving me, you serve what I want. That's Vaishnava etiquette. You look at Kirtiman Krishnaguru, he serves perfectly. Mm-hmm. He serves exactly what you want. Why? Because he's selfless. Because he wants to please you, not please me. That's his consciousness. So you have to learn this. So learn how to serve and respect the Vaishnavas, the Guru, the Brahmanas. It means that all the devotees. We like to serve, I notice actually, when devotees serve the Guru or the senior devotee, they serve very carefully. But then when it comes to the junior devotee, they just put as much on the plate as they want. Right? So the consciousness change. But actually you should serve all the Vaishnavas the same. The junior devotees and the senior devotees the same. That's first class. What do you think it's like in the spiritual world? Everyone's just running around, just putting more and more on it. No, they're serving perfectly, exactly as they want.
Okay. And also, when Purna Prabhu was very annoyed because he put so much time and so much care he put such a nice feet. And upstairs and the third, they just put one above the other and mix everything. So it was so annoying on the same.
I put all the time to cooking and so that everything is done properly and just the front of water and just everything. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you want to annoy Korma Prabhu, then just don't serve the feast properly. It becomes very nice. He cooks something very nice, he cooks the whole feast for the devotees and it's not served properly, he becomes very upset. Okay, so this is part of the etiquette. 50% is the cooking, right? But the other 50% is the serving the prasad. The prasad has to be palatable. It's cooked very nicely. You digest very nicely. But then the other 50% is how it is served. that also, you know, gets the digestion going. Then you can digest perfectly. Okay, so we'll go to verse 17. So just read these fine verses. Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who misled people by directing them to the path of destruction, as described in the previous verse, are in effect boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell, and their followers go with them. King Indra said, "Therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, because he is in the mode of goodness. He is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him." While Indra, the king of the demigods, thought in this way and repented, in his own assembly, Brihaspati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood his mind. Thus he became invisible to Indra and left home, for Brihaspati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra. Although Indra searched vigorously with the assistance of the other demigods, he could not find Brihaspati. Then Indra thought, "Alas, my spiritual master has become dissatisfied with me, and now I have no means of achieving good fortune." Although Indra was surrounded by demigods, he could not find peace of mind. So we have to be very careful of how we serve the guru and the senior Vaishnavas. There is this old English saying, familiarity breeds contempt. So if you become too familiar, you have to be careful with senior devotees, not becoming too familiar. Because if you become too familiar, you may commit offences unnecessarily. If you read Harisori Prabhu's diary, he served Prabhupada from late 75 to early 77. In early 77, he went to Prabhupada because he felt he was becoming too familiar with Prabhupada and he wasn't seeing him properly. And he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I think I need a break from your service." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, "You should have a break at this point in time." Because quite often devotees would come to Prabhupada and say, "Prabhupada, I think I need a break from your service." More because it was just so intense being with Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was just travelling to another country, to another country, to another country. And devotees just, they found it hard to get. So sometimes they'd say, "Prabhupada, I need a break." Prabhupada said, "No, you just stay." But when Harisori Prabhu came, because he said he felt that he was developing a little bit of a disrespectful attitude towards Prabhupada, and he said, "Prabhupada, I need a break from your service." Prabhupada said, "Yes, you should have a break." Okay. So we have to be very careful when dealing with the senior devotees. Don't become familiar with them. Like that. Always offer respect. Okay. So then what happened is Brihaspati, he disappears from Indra. So sometimes I know the spiritual master, my spiritual master used to do this to me also. Sometimes there was a fault in the mentality. And the guru can detect that the disciple has a fault in the mentality. And then the disciple realizes he has a fault in the mentality. But instead of just forgiving the disciple immediately, the guru may extend the... I remember one time my spiritual master came here and he didn't like my mentality. Because I was in the wrong state of mind serving him. So he came here for a week, and for 5 days, he did not speak to me. I was serving him every day. I was serving him prasadam, and I was doing all sorts of things. He didn't even speak to me for 5 days. Like that. Just to show me the point. Because my mentality was wrong. So for 5 days, he didn't say a thing to me. Right? So instead of asking, because I understood on the first day, I understood my mentality wasn't right. He understood my mentality wasn't right. I understood it. So on the first day, I started to try to rectify myself. But then he extended the period of suffering for me. It was putting me through a great deal of difficulty for a long time. Why? Because then it goes deep into your consciousness. Mm-hmm. So Krishna does this to us also. Sometimes, I remember one time, Jagatarini Manaji asked me to do something. And then I thought in my mind, I was actually very tired. It was on one of the retreats. And I was very tired. So then I thought in my mind, she's more senior to me, but I am more intelligent. You know, so I thought I won't exactly follow. I'll do what she said, but not exactly the way she said it. So then for 3 weeks afterwards, I had absolutely no taste in my chanting. Because Krishna was teaching me, you fool, who do you think you are? You know, you've been instructed by the senior devotee. You didn't follow the instruction, right? Even though you're tired. And then I said to Krishna on my mind, I was tired and it was difficult. At the end of the retreat, I did so much service, please forgive me. He said, no. He said, you're a fool. So for 3 weeks, just to get the point into my mind. So sometimes the guru does like this, sometimes Krishna does like this. Okay, so next week we'll continue. Next Monday we'll do an overview of chapters 1 to 6, and then Tuesday we'll go back to chapter 7, and then the following week we'll do the exams. Srila Prabhupada ki.